This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio Program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. Carla L. Rucker is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Everybody on board and ready?
Ready.
We are.
Ready to go.
Say a word about, are we full up on the two gatherings we have planned soon?
No, plenty of space still open.
Okay, might just mention one of them is about balancing and healing according to the information in the Law of One, led by Beatrice Gonzalez. Wonderful. Be here in Louisville. The other one is discussion led by Safira Vox, held at the farm of Fox and Smut. And it's a wonderful place, absolutely wonderful, and I think it's going to be exciting, all about the archetypes in Book 4 of the Law of One, both of those coming up in March and April. I hope that you can make one or the other of them, whichever one appeals to you.
The first workshop that Carla mentioned, being led by Beatrice, the one focused on healing, takes place March 21st through 23rd. And the second workshop, Carla mentioned, focusing on the archetypes, takes place April 11th through 13th. More information about either workshop can be obtained from BringForth homepage, bringforth.org, and or contacting us at contact@llresearch.org via email. Ready for our opening riff?
I'm going.
All right. Well, before we get into that, a quick note to the caller, area code 229. We see that you would like to ask a question, and we'll pipe you in after our opening riff. So the session today comes from February 12, 2006, and this is Quo. Quo says, "We are aware of the concern within this instrument that there might be any hint or shadow of ethical commitment that would be beyond that which entities living as you live and the lives that you live could complete. We wish to assure each that those mental reservations create in the metaphysical world a contract not to be such a priest. There is a limit that you have set upon yourself. You wish to relate to the world directly. You do not wish to go into retreat from the world. You wish to engage in the world. This is acceptable within the limits of a more generalized conceptualization of the commitment to living life as a priest or an adept. There is a general sense in which every entity is a priest. It is said in your holy work that you are a nation of priests and a holy people. We believe this to be precisely correct."
Thank you, Gary. Since we are coming up on an archetype workshop and material such as this may be relevant and I won't be able to attend, I thought that I would put in a word about adepthood in general. A couple of notes before I begin. When Don and I first got together, Don was a total loner. And the first time I ever asked him when he was going off on a trip, when he was going to be home, he told me if I ever asked him that again, he was moving out. With that understood, I realized that the only way I was going to be part of his life was by indirect means. So I simply decided whenever he was going out in his car, I would ask if I could go with, and he would say, why? And I'd say, oh, I look sort of like a ride, and I'm going to bring a book, and I have a nice nap if I don't feel like reading. In other words, totally different from him, which I did. And I spent many an hour, comfortable hour, in his big car, reading and napping. And finally one day, a friend of his that knew me saw me in the car outside a flying service. Don was a pilot, and he spent many an hour hangar flying with friends of his at Louisville Flying Service and Kentucky Flying Service. What are you doing out here? I said, oh, I'm just hanging out waiting for Don. He said, well, come on in. I said, well, I don't know. No, come on in, he said. So I did. Well, everybody, to Don's astonishment, was delighted to see me. I became the queen of the hangar flyers. And wherever Don went, everybody was looking for Carlo. So he relaxed, and I became part of his life. And within about 6 months, it turned out that he did not want me to be anywhere but in the same room with him. There was a big switch around. And I never did anything, you know, except by indirect means. But it just, that there was that in him which was lonely, and he discovered he liked me being part of his life. So very quickly, I was very responsible to Don. I needed to be with him whenever he was home, which was about half the time, because he was a pilot. Okay, that's number one. Number two, when we first got together, I was reading W.E. Butler on white magic. As a Christian mystic, I was fascinated, absolutely to the bone, drawn completely into what he was writing about. It felt right to me and natural and resonant, and I read and reread and reread those books. And finally, Don said, well, would you like to pursue being a magician? And I said, sure, I think I would. So I wrote Butler, and Butler had recently died, but the fellow that was responsible for his estate received the letter and was impressed by me enough to say that he would take me on as a student. I would need to come to the Canary Islands, which was where he was living. He was a British fellow. And I would need to reserve about 4 hours a day for work strictly with the ritual part of ritual magic. I prayed and prayed about this. It was a chance of a lifetime. I knew this wasn't going to last long. This fellow was not young, and it was a dying breed. I don't know of any truly pure strain of white magicians that are now writing publicly. For the most part, it's a secret brotherhood, and they do their work completely below the surface and not within the knowledge of anyone but the secret brotherhood. So this was a chance that I needed to take if I was going to pursue it. But what came to me, what kept coming to me, was that I had a commitment that I had carefully carved out for myself to be with Don, to be in the world. The half of the time he wasn't home, I was busy doing his wash, cleaning the house, preparing the foods he liked the best, and so forth, because I couldn't do those things when he was home. I needed to be in the same room with him. And you can't do much but read when you're, you know, in the living room, period. Matter of fact, I couldn't even work except... Yeah, you know, all of the work that I got done, and I got a lot of things done for research I did when he was gone. So I wrote the guy back, and I said, thank you very much, but I've decided that I cannot commit to that number of hours, and I know that this is a chance of a lifetime, and I'm sorry that I can't do it. So I, very reluctantly, but knowing that I needed to do this, I left it behind. I never really looked back, but there have been others in the group that have come and gone in our lives at L&L Research, come to our weekly study and meditation group, that have had similar concerns about how much they were drawn to the life of the adept, to the life of the recluse, but meanwhile they had responsibilities of the world, and they didn't want to become in an ethical bind because of intending to be more of a loner than they could be, or somehow dropping the ball one way or the other. So this was very comforting to a fellow known only in the transcript as T, and also to me, that there was no ethical problem, that when you knew that you could not commit yourself to being a full-out magician, that there was a contract set up in the metaphysical world that blocked any ethical problems that you had. And so your ethical arrangements were what you could do as long as you were doing that with your whole heart. There is a limit that you have set upon yourself, it said. You wish to relate to the world directly. You do not wish to go into retreat from the world. You wish to engage in the world. This was my problem. I wanted to engage. At the same time, I was hungry for meditation. But it was acceptable for me to have these seeming surface things working against each other, because they weren't really. They were simply the limits of my contract. And I think that is made here at the end is tremendously important to realize for everybody. There is a sense in which every human being is a priest, is an adept. We are all responsible metaphysical beings. That is the essence of our nature. We are made of love. We come here in love to serve love. And when we come to ourselves and remember that that's what we wanted to do, however we wake up, however we get out of the box of our culture and shake loose of the buzz and the focusing entirely upon what cereal we eat and so forth. We have a priesthood to follow. What is the nature of that priesthood? That's up to you. Some people choose to act within their communities. and be activists for animals, for the air, for water pollution, for saving the trees and so forth. Some people devote every bit of their priesthood to their children and their spouse. And that is absolutely legitimate. There is no greater priesthood than the priesthood of a parent or a spouse. Because relationships are everything. To turn away from a relationship is to turn away from the main source of catalyst and the main source of service and the main source of learning for your life. Relationships need to come first, as far as I'm concerned. And I encourage each one of you to consider that thought. The value of each person as a soul is indescribable and infinite. And although we can learn a great deal from other things, we learn the most from those mirrors of ourselves that are other human beings. How shall you be a priest? You engage in that contract just as you wish. And then I pray you may find the joy of responsibility in disciplining your personality to become that priest that you wish to become. Gary, what's our caller have to say?
All right. I was giving it a moment to see if you would continue. Sometimes your pauses can be substantial. I wasn't sure.
Sometimes the pauses are substantial because spirits got me by the throat.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just done. In this case, they were done.
Well, I did want to comment and say that you sound really strong, a lot stronger than I've heard in previous episodes, so it's really good and encouraging to hear that. So I have unmuted area code 229. Hi, to whom are we speaking? Caller from 229, are you there? All right. If you can hear us, I'm going to put you back on mute. We'll tackle...
Have him press 1. Make sure he's pressed 1.
Yeah, as I see that in the studio.
Okay.
And if you can hear us, we'll tackle one of our questions sent in advance, and then we'll come back to you, see if you're still there and interested in asking a question. So, back to the pre-submitted questions. The first one comes... from Sarah Bright, that was sent into the Law of One Raw Material Study Group on Facebook. So Sarah says, this is a two-part question. Part one, is there a chance for an entity who has not chosen a path yet to pick one in time before the harvest? She says she's asking for somebody else. And the second part is, do you think the next harvest will be in 2021 or sooner?
Well, why don't I tackle that first? In the first place, I think there was a harvest for the planet, and that harvest has been and gone. It received a lot of publicity, but people were looking in the wrong place, didn't see it. It was like, zing, there it goes, and nobody saw it. It was sad, because everybody was looking for a harvest that included them, and it was the harvest of the planet. Our Earth is alive. It receives vibrations from the sun. Light has density. Each facet of light holds information. So the denser the light, the more facets in the light, the more information. We have finished with third density that has been and gone. The harvest is behind us, and we are now receiving fourth density light, which has many, many more facets than third density light. Contains much, much more information, and is not designed to be easy for us poor third density folks to comprehend. The only way that we can work with the light as it is now is to live our lives as if we were in fourth density. That is to live lives of love and receiving love, to be ethical beings, to have honor, to seek joy and share it, and have all those fourth density values. The more you have fourth density values, the more you are molding your own DNA to hook up extra strings. I don't know what the proper name for that is, but to become able to use fourth density light. Now, it's really hard to use fourth density light when you're a third density person, even if you're getting the truth straight, because the truth is so painful. We are not good at telling the truth about ourselves. We look at somebody that we don't like, and we don't say, what in that person is me? Let me find that person within myself and heal it so that I like myself, because that person is me. We don't say that. We say, oh, I would never be like that. Wrong. We just haven't found the part of ourselves that could be like that if we chose to be like that. It's really important to use those feelings we have for people we don't like in a positive way, and to heal ourselves so that we no longer judge. We forgive, 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 and forgive again. When we do that, we're using fourth density light. And we will find ourselves rapidly changing. That also is a challenge. Change is difficult. Being the same is comfortable. Change is sometimes way out of our comfort zone. And I wish everybody luck with this. I am certainly working with it. But at any rate, that's the harvest that has happened. There's a second harvest that's going to happen for all of us when we drop the physical and it's no longer working for us. The light body that came into our fetus somewhere around the time of our birth. It could have been before, it could have been after. Let go. It just lets go of the physical. It's no longer intertwined with the physical because the physical can no longer give it any catalyst. It's no longer useful. So we become disincarnate and we move right on. We lose nothing important, just a body, and we'll pick up another one after we heal the incarnation and go through whatever processes we need to go through. Now, our harvest is probably going to happen at the end of that time, because I think just about all of us listening to the show today are ready to go. They're very ready to go. They are graduates of third density. They think about others more than themselves more than half the time. They love. They forgive. They're ready to move on. So when you walk the steps of light after death, and you can read about this in the raw material, I'm covering material that I don't mean to zip right past, but I need to answer the question as quickly as possible. And you finish walking those steps of light and you look down to see where you are, you're going to be in fourth density. Okay, you've graduated. If you haven't graduated, it's no biggie because you get to incarnate in another third density body in another planet that's still got third density light. And you'll go through, 76,000 more years of McDonald's and so forth. And if that's what you want, if you haven't made up your mind yet, just what you do want, then more power to you. You get all the time you need in any grade that you're in. This is third grade. You get an infinite amount of time in third grade, and you will eventually learn. I mean, evolution is a pressure that just eventually you will graduate into fourth density, whether you want to or not, because that's just the nature of your being. But likely you're going to graduate after this incarnation. But it's a subjective, personal time of harvest for you and you only. There's not one biggie where everybody gets picked up on spaceships and swept away or any of the other constructions that fanciful people who like to sound good create with them as the tour guide, of course. That's not going to happen. You get your very own harvest. So we've had one harvest. We're going to have another harvest when we drop the body. And Sarah, I hope that wait a minute. Yeah, I'm talking to Sarah. I hope that you are able to make a harvest. I think you probably already have. I don't think you need to worry about it overly much. Simply keep doing what you're doing. Love as much as possible. Allow yourself to be loved as much as possible. Allow joy to flood your body when you feel the sun, when you have rain drenching your skin. Feel the love that's pouring through this earth from nature. Feel the love from the entities around you that love you or that simply love everything and love everybody and you happen to be part of it. Accept it all and love it back and you'll be fine. Yes, there's plenty of chance for you to graduate. Don't worry about it. Just keep doing what you're doing. Go ahead, people.
Jim or Austin?
I could talk a little bit about just the nature of the question itself kind of assumes that harvest is going to happen a certain way and not another way. And I think that most people who read the raw material come out of it with an idea of how harvest will happen and think that it's a pretty solid idea. But on the Bring Forth forums, we have a sub-forum dedicated to discussing the harvest, and when I first found that sub-forum, I had a pretty good idea of how harvest was going to happen too, and then I was exposed to thousands of different ideas, all with direct quotes from the raw material and evidence opposing my view and opposing other people's views, and the only conclusion I could really come up with is that there's no real way to know exactly how harvest is going to happen. There seem to be two major camps, whether it's going to be like a gradual, seamless thing or an instant grand event. And I think that the gradual idea probably has a little bit more evidence from the raw material because Ra talks about fourth density bodies being produced through a means of evolution of reproduction and also talks about a transition to fourth density taking between 100, 700 years, but they said that was a very vague approximation. It can't be accurate. So there's no real way to know exactly what harvest is going to be like. I think Carla's description is the closest we can really come, and it makes sense that we'll just sort of, after we pass on in this life, probably naturally, we will go through the harvest that Carla described, Ezra described. And then to address the idea of the harvest happening in 2021 specifically, I know there are still a lot of channels out there who are giving dates for some kind of ascension or harvest, and they're all different dates. That sort of gives you an idea of how fickle it is to channel prophecies like that. So who knows? It could happen in 2021. Something might happen that we can point to and say that was harvest. Or maybe not. There's really no telling for sure. I think the best emphasis is on the now, and I think that I agree with Carla. There's still plenty of time for polarization to achieve harvest because we're still in an environment that offers lots of catalyst, and I would probably argue that there is more chance for somebody incarnated now than ever before in third density to use the catalyst to achieve a harvestable state because there's just so much catalyst combined with the idea of fourth density energy, which makes it more available to us and more able for us to process it and look at it in fourth density light.
Mick, anything to add?
No, you guys have done a really good job.
I would, Austin, some couple of brilliant points. as well as Carla, I would concur with Austin's conclusion that it's really unknown what, if anything, is going to happen. The idea that Carla put forth could be 100% true, and you know, it does feel like it has some veracity. But at the same time, I think the field is wide open for other interpretations of how things might unfold if they unfold in any sort of perceivable way. I still think, especially what Carla said about living by fourth density values and loving yourself, I think those are key regardless. Basic human kindness and consideration of other people are the keys to entrance into fourth density and moving on from this experience. But that said, so while I don't know the exact mechanics regarding how harvest will transpire in our space-time realm and the physical world we live in, or what sort of timeline there is to it, in the spirit of a thought exercise, let's say that the gateway to harvest happens on at Wednesday at 2 p.m. in our clock time. So I would imagine that an entity just a minute prior at 1:59 p.m. could make so consequential a decision that it brings their violet ray emanation into harvestable quality. For instance, the classic example of someone who gives their life to save another. Person A shoves person B out of the way of an oncoming bus, thus sacrificing person A's own life for another and becoming a pancake in the process, probably. This entity, person A, may not have been, according to Ra's measurement, achieved that vibratory rate that would have been sufficient for graduation prior to that act. But in that act, their vibration dramatically increases. And as to this, the second part of Sarah's question about harvest at 2021 or sooner, I'm sorry to say that it will be in 2022. I don't know if the memo was passed out, but the guys running over at the harvest department are just over budget, behind schedule, and they had to push harvest back a year. So thank you, Sarah, so much for your question and your friend's question. We'll give our caller another shot. Area code 229, are you with us, and do you want to ask a question? I will take that as a negative. Maybe they had pressing the one button on your phone alerts us that you want to ask a question, and maybe they had mistakenly hit the one button. So
we're glad you're here anyway.
Yes, thank you for being with us. Moving on to our next question from Buddhist Jedi, sweet username, that was submitted through Bring Forth. Buddhist Jedi says, I feel that the topic of indecision is one that seems to be affecting quite a lot of people these days. Are there certain things to look for, kinds of repeating patterns or other ideas that any of you would have to overcoming something such as this? Obviously, we can't simply tell anyone what to do, but discussing the topic might help everyone get a better understanding or a point of view on indecision itself. I've got a lot to say. I just hate to go before others.
Please do. Just go ahead and start.
All right. I'll take it. Considering this question, I came upon two great quotes. I'll save one for the end. Actually, I'll save them. Martin Luther King said that faith is taking the first step even when you can't see the whole staircase. I think that's an important element in indecision. So indecision, the experience of indecision is something that's visited my own life. There have been times I've been kind of paralyzed with a sort of indecision between two paths, especially when those paths offer, of course, pros and cons and are of some consequence. I think there's a hesitancy to jump and commit oneself to a particular choice or path out of fear of not making the, quote, best choice by whatever criteria one determines best. And I think this is particularly pronounced among spiritual seekers who are conscious of wanting to improve and evolve and make the best choice. Or there's hesitancy to choose because there's fear of avoiding a lesson or fear of basically screwing something up. And it becomes increasingly problematic when the criteria for choosing one path or another is shifting. What is best? So in terms of what the Law of One might have to say, Roz says somewhere, and I couldn't find the quote, that something along the lines of that when a positively polarized entity is facing a decision, they will choose according to what decision offers the most service to others. That was the gist of it. But then again, even with that measurement, what is the greatest service to others? What if both or all choices offer service to others? So we generally can't see the results of our actions in advance. There's a real anxiety about facing those results, about realizing after the fact that perhaps the other path would have been better. So taking note of my own meanderings through the illusion, there's two points of consideration that have been helpful for me in facing indecision. And that said, I think it's best to analyze the situation with the information and resources at hand. Be honest with yourself. Examine your emotions and your motivations. Look for fear and love in your thinking. Project yourself into the future. See the consequences of each choice. And importantly, enter meditation and seek the counsel of your heart regarding which choice is most appropriate for you at this juncture, and pray and ask for guidance. And when that process is completed, however long that may take you, then stop spending time with fear. Doubt has its place at first, but when you stop feeding and energizing and paying attention to doubt, go where your heart tells you, even if it's confused. Just disengage the mind from worry and give your mind a new task. Tell your mind you're going to do something else, and that's jump. And then roll with the consequences. And then the second point of consideration is that I think this whole process is really helped and facilitated. I'm sorry, this whole process is an act of faith, essentially, when choosing, especially when there is no certainty. And how often is there certainty? So it's an attitude, I think, that the attitude of all is well and all will be well is an attitude that should be contemplated and imbued at every stage of the process, from the early parts of investigation and analysis to the final act of jumping, to know that all is well and to hold on to that mindset, because that is a fear killer, a fear remover, maybe not 100%, but that is that which curbs fear and reduces it and doubt. know that no matter which direction you choose, whether you go left or right or this job or that or fight or surrender or gain or sacrifice or to be of service or to decline service, you can't make a mistake in the ultimate sense of things. This is echoed by Quo, by Carla and Jim, and all spiritual writers and thinkers, that you can't make a mistake. No matter your outer circumstance, you can discover the self that is always here and now. And to invoke an analogy that I got from Quo channelings in the past, as the analogy goes, your lessons, no matter where you go in the world, your lessons will guide you to what you need to learn, like a relentless GPS unit that never shuts off. If you make a so-called wrong turn, the GPS is immediately charting course corrections and helping you to get back on course, no matter how much you deviate. If you meant to go to Florida and you wind up in California, your GPS will get you there, as long as you continue to engage in that process of faith and tuning and meditation and praying. That's your GPS that will, through subtle and maybe sometimes dramatic means, get you back on course. That's my response.
Excellent.
I think it's really good. The word faith is key, absolutely key. You have to live by faith and not by words. Not by anything. Live by feeling. Don't know, just feel. Go where you feel. And when you are stuck, close your eyes, feel your way, and as Gary said, jump. I can remember many times in my life when the logical thing to do and the ethical thing to do varied. One was when my husband, who had left me 7 times in 4 years, left me that 7th time, made it all the way to Canada with his lover. And I thought, oh, hallelujah, I am finally free, because I would not break a promise, and I had made a promise marrying him, so no matter how bad it was, I just wouldn't break the promise, so he had to do it. Anyway, off he went, and I went up to Massachusetts and got a job at the Boston Public Library, which is something I'd wanted to do for a long time. Got a job as a children's librarian. I was going to start in a couple of weeks. I was spending that time moving and finding an apartment and so forth, and I was up there looking for an apartment. My husband called me, and he said, well, he said, I can't get a job, and I need you, so I need you to come up here and support me. Well, he couldn't get a job because he wouldn't apply for one that he could get. He was without any degrees at all, and he was applying for a head of a cyclotron unit, you know, that kind of thing. A little bit out of touch with reality. That was my first husband. Anyway, the obvious thing to do was to tell him to stuff it and to go on with my life. But I kept looking at that marriage contract, man. There was no small print, for better or for worse. Till death do you part. Those are big words, and there's no small print. So I resigned from the Boston Public Library, cried many a tear, and set off to spend a very happy, as it turned out, 5 months in Canada, in British Columbia, which is absolutely a gorgeous place. I was divinely happy there. It was so beautiful, and I got a job at the Simon Fraser University as a librarian, and loved the job, loved the place. Of course, you know, my husband kept screwing up, but what can you say? I mean, he was who he was. Well, finally he decided he didn't want to be married, and I said, again, hallelujah, you got it, I'll give you half my money, You can live on it. We've been living on it. I had just gotten a dream job up there that was more than double my salary, so I knew I could give him enough to live on. Said, bye-bye, have a good life. But he said, no, I'll only divorce you if you come back to Louisville, Kentucky with me, the home of my family. And he says, you have to be with your people because it's a difficult thing, you know, divorcing, and you need to be with your people. Well, as it, you know, he knew good and well that my family was a family of performers, and they had never taken care of me in one instant of their lives that they could get away from it. I mean, it's ridiculous. They were not a nurturing family. But, again, the only thing that would work was for me to give up this dream job, come back to Louisville, Kentucky, and I did. And guess what? Don Elkins wanted me to continue with the project, and he taught me how to channel, and here I am today. Mistakes? There aren't any mistakes. Just close your eyes and jump. See what happens. Life's interesting.
Austin or Jim?
Go ahead, Austin.
I just have something really short to offer. I sort of interpreted the question to mean indecision in the sense that Ra would refer to the sinkhole of indifference between making the grand choice that we're here to make instead of the little choices that we're here to make, which are obviously related. So the only thing I have to offer is probably one of my favorite Ra quotes that I find myself referencing many times when discussing the Ra material with people. And Ra says, "It is impossible to help another being directly. It is only possible to make a catalyst available in whatever form, the most important being the radiation of realization of oneness with the Creator from the self, less important being the information such as we share with you. We cannot offer shortcuts to enlightenment. Enlightenment is of the moment, is an opening to intelligent infinity. It can only be accomplished by the self, for the self. Another self cannot teach, learn enlightenment, but only teach, learn information, inspiration, or a sharing of love, of mystery, of the unknown that makes the other self reach out and begin the seeking process that ends in a moment. But who can know when an entity will open the gates to the present?" And that was in response to Don asking if there's anything we could do to help people reach fourth density. And Ra is basically saying, I think that if you see somebody who is in the sinkhole of indifference or is in indecision, you really can't do anything to push them one way or the other, but you can radiate what you have found in your heart, the part of the Creator that you found to be true within yourself. And hopefully they can observe that and realize that the decision might be worth making.
Really good point. Nikki?
You guys have done a great job. I mean, I don't have anything else to say.
I will note that our fourth questioner, Dale, did add to his question, "Also, it has been a great pleasure to hear more from Jim. It is a great reference to hear what the scribe's viewpoints are regarding the Law of One and life in general." Just throwing that out there.
That's the last question. We have another one before that, don't we?
Yeah.
Help me here. I don't want to talk about myself.
Jim is always devaluing his contribution.
Well, you guys have already said it. I mean, there's no use in me saying something twice.
Yeah, that's practical. The other quote in response to this question that I found interesting and wanted to introduce comes from Orison Swett Marden. I'm not sure who that is, but I found it on the net. And this individual said, "A lobster, when left high and dry among the rock, does not have the sense enough to work his way back to the sea, but waits for the sea to come to him. If it does not come, he remains where he is and dies. Although the slightest effort would enable him to reach the waves, which are perhaps within a yard of him. The world is full of human lobsters, people stranded on the rocks of indecision and procrastination, who, instead of putting forth their own energies, are waiting for some grand billow of good fortune to set them afloat. I think there's skill and value in waiting and in waiting for guidance or a hunch or an arrangement of circumstance. I don't think we need to be action, action, action. Still, some of us, myself included at times, are lobsters and waiting for somebody else to sort of do the work for us or something else to carry us into a better tomorrow instead of just standing up and making it happen. So, it is 1:50. The third question asks about activism, and
we could chew on that one all day.
Yeah, that's a big one. I vote to save that until next episode.
Well, I have something to say about that.
Well, you have a week to refine it then. Is that all right if we skip to the fourth question, or Jim, would you prefer?
Why don't we skip to the last part of the fourth question?
Well,
Mickey, why don't you talk a little bit about yourself, how you came to the Law of One, and how you see your life now?
Well, it might be discouraging for people who have indecision, because I've never had indecision. My life has always been opened right up to me. The next step has presented itself, and I've taken it. I don't know why. I don't know why I haven't been sitting around wondering what I should do. But with every opportunity that's come my way, from college and teacher corps after that, buying land in Kentucky, going to the survival school, starting my own, it seems like it just would open up. I don't know if there was some decision I made somewhere that made it possible for me to be aware of the next step, but it just has come my way. So, that's kind of discouraging for somebody to hear if they're wondering what to do. And I guess I would say to a person in that situation to value your indecision and think about what it is that it causes you to be indecisive, and take that further and find out where your passion is. What is it that you really want to do? I mean, I don't think you have to make choices based on, well, let's see, I want to save the world, or I want to cure cancer. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Just what is it that moves you? What it is in your life that you're interested in? What has gotten your juices going in the past? And, follow that. I think it's been well said, follow your bliss by
Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell, that's right. And so do that and see where it takes you. See what every day brings you. Because I believe truly that every day brings you an opportunity to do whatever it is you're supposed to be doing. It's not by chance that you're here. You've helped put yourself here, and larger forces in the form of your guides and friends and teachers have helped bring you here to the point. So if you feel a kind of an indecision, just stop and don't do anything until you feel like you know what you want to do. If you want to be a lobster for a while, then be a lobster for a while. Eventually, things will come to you. Ideas will come to you. Emotions will come to you. Opportunities will come to you. And then just follow them, and then you'll be fearless. Go forward as if you know what you're doing. And hope and pray and work and sweat and, rock and roll.
All right, group vote, Austin, Carla, and me. Was what Jim said a repetition of what we said?
No, I think that was excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was entirely unique and good.
Oh, why? Thank you, folks.
I would like to say one thing about Jim, and that's not really fair, but I've lived with the man for a long time. And Ross said something about him that is so entirely true. It goes down to the essence. Ross said, when you meditate, look at Don, look at Carla, and look at Jim, and realize that you have almost a classic love, wisdom, and power. Don was wisdom, I was love, and Jim is power. Jim doesn't hesitate. Jim doesn't spend time waiting on a rock. Jim has a serenity and an energy that is entirely unique to him. but it is so powerful that he powered the raw contact. Don and I had been working together for 8 years in channeling. Jim came 3 weeks later, the raw contact began. That's not a coincidence. Jim's power, Jim's ability to be a battery for me, enabled me to do the work of channeling. That is who Jim is. He is power, and he hides it completely under a mask of being charming and not saying very much.
No, I really am charming.
I remember one time I asked him, I said, Jim, is all you ever say yep, nope, and maybe? He scratched his head and he said, yep. And he scratched his head again and thought a while. He said, no. And then he scratched his head again and he said, maybe.
Yeah, I almost, that as I was going on about indecision, I almost made mention or made reference to Jim and his own life path, what I've seen and what I've heard about him. Your meditation when you, Jim, had to determine whether or not you would come back to Louisville and join Carla and Don, how long did that last?
Well, that was a long one. That was 30 seconds.
30 seconds, yeah. That's the clarity you've had. So I think it is 1:57. I think we should wrap this episode up. Before we do, a quick mention again that we have a couple workshops coming up and we invite you to join. There's still space. One is March 21st through 23rd in Louisville, being led by a friend of ours named Beatrice Gonzalez, who's spent years as a healing practitioner and has made a unique synthesis and marriage of her technique with the principles of the Law of One. It happens in Louisville. And our second workshop happens about an hour and a half, hour from Louisville in rural central Kentucky. At the farm property of our friend Foxes, who will be hosting an archetypes workshop April 11th through 13th. Weather permitting, she has 70 acres on which we can have a bonfire, which really, really looking forward to. We'll have our first round robin, the first portion of the weekend where we go around the circle and share a little bit about ourselves around the fire, fingers crossed. So, to conclude, you've been listening to LL Researches in the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions, Sarah and Buddhist Jedi. This week, we hope to get to Mark's and Dale's. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LL Research. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and talk to you then.
We love you all.